What's the 411? You're tuned into 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This edition of 411 Teen talks with the Common Sense Team. The Common Sense Team consists of teens with diverse political affiliations. The Common Sense Team panel seeks to maintain a substantive political dialogue, analyzing and evaluating national, state, and local policies of today. I am joined. The team is here. I'm always glad to have you all. First one, Olivia Saunders, Rickards High School, Junior, Politics and Language. That's her thing.
Thanks for having me.
Always welcome and glad to have you. Hannah Kuros, really the originator of the Common Sense Team, and I'm always glad to have her. She's also from Rickards. They all are IB. And she's a junior, and she is, well, what are you into now? Science and computers?
Computer science.
It changes all
and
the time.
And poor handwriting also.
Boy, I made an impression, didn't I? And Quinn Huckaba. Quinn is into government, foreign policy, physics, dance, and he's a junior in the IB program.
Thanks for having me.
And Oleana Shinnick. Oh, got it right. How about that? She is into medicine and genetics and art history.
Glad to be here.
And I am Dr. Liz Holyfield. And again, I welcome all of you. I'm always glad to have you. Let's look, and we always say we're looking at local, national. We end up always talking about national. So that's probably what we're going to talk about as usual. But how do you assess to this point the Trump presidency and administration?
Well, I think for him, in like regard to being able to implement his agenda, it's been going pretty badly. But since I'm pretty against his agenda, for me, it's going pretty well. I'm happy that he hasn't made as much progress as he would have liked to by this point, because I think the main tenets that he ran on is that he was going to repeal and replace Obamacare, he was going to be stricter on immigration, and he was going to take corruption out of politics and, mm-hmm. Drain the swamp. But mm-hmm. His immigration ban has been blocked by federal courts twice. I can't believe it, but like even with 7 years of preparation, they couldn't even get to the point where they were confident enough to have a vote on a mm-hmm. replacement for the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. And his cabinet's been pretty swampy.
Okay.
So not great for him.
All right. Yes, ma'am. Olivia.
I don't know. I mean, Hannah described it as like a victory for people who are against Trump, but like honestly, I don't feel like it's a victory for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, I don't know, I used to read the news really religiously, but now I just kind of scan because I feel very desensitized to it, and it makes me sad to read the news, and I don't think that's the kind of impression that I should be having. But I don't know. I can't even pick out individual things from the presidency. I think it's just, like, overall a mess. Like, I don't know. Even though I'm, like, a big Obamacare supporter, I think it would have been, like, better if they could do it, because at least the government would have done something except for stand still for 3 months. Like,
good point. You raised some good points, both of you, and we'll come back to them.
Well,
yes.
I think he's actually – there's one thing that he's succeeding in, which is kind of scaring me. And I don't know if you'd say succeeding, but with the environment, he's kind of making some progress on that, and I don't want him to, because mm-hmm. I'm pro-environment. But he is, like, declaring an end to the war on coal. He's mm-hmm. saying that he's going to take coal over the environment every time, and it's kind of scaring me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, ma'am. How would you assess the – Trump presidency and his administration to this point?
To this point, I haven't seen much progress except what Quinn mentioned on the environmental aspect. What I do enjoy, the only thing that I do enjoy about the Trump presidency, is his Supreme Court judge nominee, Neil Gorsuch. I've been listening to his mm-hmm. hearings. And though some people may think that his responses are a little bit, you know, they're sketchy. He always says, like, the same thing, that I cannot tell you my opinion. I believe that's what a judge should do. Nobody is asking about his perspective of the situation. They're asking him to assess the law. And kind of, he has been very solid throughout the hearings. He's been very consistent. The only thing that kind of worries me is that he was very cautious in approaching several, Supreme Court cases. For example, when he was talking about Brown versus Board, he was talking about how much he was for that decision. But when it came to some other cases, for example, the big case on abortion, he was very, very cautious about that subject and, very careful.
Yeah. Well, do you think any of that had to do with just him being a judge?
No, because if he were to assess those Supreme Court cases as he assessed Brown versus Board, Brown versus Board is something that everybody agrees with, so he agreed with it as well. But on the pro-choice case, he couldn't really say anything because I don't think he wanted people to. He didn't want to go against anybody. He wanted to remain neutral on that subject.
Yes.
I guess I think Neil Gorsuch just stated pretty definitively that he would, if Trump asked him to repeal Roe versus Wade, he would Roe v. Wade. He would walk out the door.
Yeah, I heard.
So he's. I think, though he's certainly not pro-choice, he is at least fine with that pick. Mm-hmm. But I think that if we're talking about Neil Gorsuch, I think that he's a bit too much of a strict constructionist when it comes to the Constitution, because I think I'm in favor of judges that, they use legal precedent, but they also, interpret the laws in a way that's fit with the times that you're within, and they're more receptive to, changes in social norms or, cultural undercurrents that are, because I think society and people end up eventually bending towards the light. So as society progresses, I think our law should become more progressive. And I think that he's a little bit too staunch in his ways, but I think he's a good guy. And I also, to what Ollie said, this show originally started as Common Sense, Teens Takes on the 2016 election, and we've extended that to Teens Take on Politics, because I think it's really important to remain engaged even after, the showmanship of the election's over. And when it comes to, the lack of a vote on the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, for me that's a huge win, because I know that I have many family members that are on Medicaid, and to, if any progress had been made to repealing a lot of the Obama era provisions that expanded Medicaid, that would be a very scary thing for me. So in that case, I think a lack of a vote, even though it's less of a definitive answer for what the future will hold, at least for now, I think that's a huge win, and I think that's newsworthy.
Okay. Trump continues to allege that Trump Towers were wiretapped by the Obama administration. Now, even his own administration has said it didn't happen. We can't find, and if they could find anything, they would have used it, or at least I think they would have, okay? But they continue to say, what are you talking about? It's just not there. How do you all feel about this? And Quinn, go right ahead.
I think it goes back to Trump being a very reactive man. And that announcement came right after a week where things were going pretty badly for him. And I think that he just kind of said it in order to try to deflect attention away from his decisions and deflect it onto, once again, the corruption of our government, which he's now a part of, so that's kind of weird. But the corruption of the previous government with Obama. So, because that's kind of what he's based his election on, was the corruption of the government and the corruption of, Obama and the corruption of the people that have come before him. So,
yes.
I think this kind of speaks to, the people are willing to believe him on this subject. It speaks to how little hope they kind of possess in government already, and I think that's very sad. that all the FBI has led several investigations on this wiretapping, and they weren't able to find anything. And people still think that everybody is against Trump. It's, for, to me personally, it's a little bit unreasonable, but it's understandable why people are following it.
Okay. Yeah. Olivia.
I don't know. I don't think that it's just corruption in the government. I also think that, like, when he says stuff like Obama wiretapped the White House, he's making a very conscious connection to his supporters. I mean, not only has he been saying ridiculous stuff like that, I mean, he's been – I saw an estimate the other day that one of three – every 3 days spent in his presidency has included a visit to a Trump hotel for Trump, and that he spends so much of his time at rallies, which is ridiculous because he's not –
he's
getting elected for four more, or he won't even have a chance to get elected for, like,
let's hope,
for four more years. So I think that when he says stuff like that, he's also appealing to the base with which he started. I mean, when he was running, he was promising crazy things. He was promising to ban all Muslims. That failed. He was promising to build a wall. That also, I haven't seen any progress on that recently. So I think that when he attacks the Obama administration, or if he made, like, an attack on Hillary or something, I think that those kinds of things, they resonate with the people that voted for him and kind of distract him from the fact that he is not doing what they elected him to do.
And how do you think, and I share this is to all of you, and I'll come back to you, but how do you think the base feels? How does the base feel? I guess I'm looking at you, Quinn. Do you know how the base feels?
Well, I have some friends who are Trump supporters.
Okay.
And I don't know. It kind of seems to me like there's a lot of leeway that they give him. Like, they assume that a lot of his failures come from the people around him and not him himself. And so, like, he won't get something done and they'll say, well, the president doesn't really have that much power to do things. Or,
so they make excuses.
Right, right. So I feel like the kind of aura that he's built up of this lone man fighting against the entire world to get where he's gotten to. I think that will lend itself to supporters who will believe in him no matter what he does, really.
I think that that is true for some people. I think that there's a lot of variety in the way that people react to the Trump presidency or the people that voted for him.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back to Olivia. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I have the Common Sense team here, and we are looking at the Trump presidency. I had to interrupt Olivia, and we were talking about the base and how the base feels about the presidency to this point. Olivia, you will continue.
In my experiences, I think that I've just seen a lot of variety in the way that people view Trump. And I do think that, in general, his base is willing to give him a lot of leeway, as I think is true for any president. Mm-hmm. I mean, but I don't know. I know my grandmother is the most ardent Trump supporter that I know. And she I know my mom asked her if she supported how his presidency was going. And my mom was like, don't go into any detail because we don't like to talk about that kind of stuff with her. But she was like, yep, I support what he's doing. I want him to build that wall. And, you know, like, I think a very, wholehearted support. And I do think that for her there is a tendency to blame liberals or whoever she wants to blame. But I know that I was also talking with Ian a week ago, who was on the show last time. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how we both, like, we agree that there was some bad stuff going on in the administration and that, like, we were both pretty critical of, like, the way that Trump's administration had been going or the way that his leadership had been working. And I think that that speaks to, like, the fact that the more traditional conservatives that voted for him are not seeing what traditional conservatives want. So, I don't know. I think that there's a lot of variety because there are a lot of different reasons that people voted for him. And I think to say, like, that all of them have one reaction is pretty generalistic.
Okay. All right. And yes, ma'am, I know you had some comments. I had to put you on hold.
I think that, like, Donald Trump realizes that is the main promises that he made to his base were that, I'll be able to make deals. I'll be able to, you know, be crooked on your behalf. And, it's really scary to me that he's just passed executive action to, back away from the Paris Climate Agreement and to repeal the Clean Power Plan. But, like, I think that's, like, one measure that he's done that should please his base, because even though it won't, it won't bring the coal industry, raging back, it'll probably prolong prolong the tenure of different coal factories that were affected by the plan. So I guess if I was a Trump supporter in coal country, that'd be something that I'd be looking towards. But I think, like, he knows on issues like immigration and on, repealing and replacing Obamacare, that since he hasn't been able to make good on those promises, like, I think that's why he brought up, Obama wiretapped me. Because I think it's much easier to go against something than to support something. So if he knows, like, oh, I might be losing my base, I need to bring, like, a villain so that, my base can focus on demonizing them instead of criticizing me. So I think that's, he's trying to harken back to the good old days where he could only, like, he could complain about Obama and not have to do much else.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Also, I was saying about some things that made his base happy, and I was also thinking about the budget, because to be really honest, I don't know how one of his supporters would react to it, but I assume their reaction would be positive because it's an increase in defense funding and a small decrease on taxes, even though that doesn't affect the majority of people that voted for him. But, reductions to programs like education that some really alt-right people have been calling for years. So I don't know. I think that he has made that as well. But
sure. Go ahead.
As Ollie mentioned, I'm really afraid for the education cuts, because with the Trump administration coming into office, you can see how little emphasis they put on people with higher degrees. For example, if you look at Trump's brand, Trump University, even though it's not a real university, it is basically like a brand, a marketing strategy. And so basically, to me, that's saying that, oh, yeah, you don't need to have a doctorate, you don't need to have a master's, you don't need to go to school to succeed. It's relying on that dream that everybody had, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, that you can go to Wall Street and succeed and just mm-hmm. be a marketer and be that good. And with all of the emphasis put on a lot of private schools, public schools are going to suffer even more. And that scares me already, because being enrolled in a public high school, there are already many problems, especially being in a Title I school, and it really scares me that our free lunch program might be cut, which a lot of students rely on.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Yeah, did you have a comment?
I think even if funding will be siphoned from public schools to maybe substantiate charter schools, because, Republicans are generally pro-choice, so they would typically favor charter schools as an option. But, even if funding might be siphoned from that, I think school lunch programs are, like, things that everyone can get behind, and they'll be fairly safe. And
well, I'm glad you're so positive, because Meals on Wheels, I don't see how you can cut that.
I don't understand it.
It doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican. It's Meals on Wheels, and he can certainly think about cutting that for the elderly, and these folks need it. So I don't know, honey, you might want to revisit that. It's very, and I'm not criticizing you, it's very optimistic, I guess, but I don't think it's real. Yes, Quinn.
I'm defending myself.
I just wanted to comment on that Meals on Wheels idea. It kind of, to me, speaks to a larger idea for him of cutting the things that are unnecessary. So, like, for elderly people, I think what it says to me when I see that he's fighting Meals on Wheels, that it's not as important to care for the elderly people as it is to care for the people who are going to work and put jobs and put money in, mm-hmm. which that's a very cynical way of looking at things. And that may just be an impression I get, but that's what it looks like. Even if that's not what's true, right. that's what it looks like.
And which goes to my next question that I always ask you. As we look at these, I'm going to get to you. As we look at these issues and we look at the responses and look at how things evolve, what did we vote for? Did we vote for the issue? Did we vote for the party? Or did we vote for the person? And you look at that look on your face. So I'll start with you.
No, I mean, the first thought that came to my mind is we didn't vote for children. personally, I think a lot of Trump supporters were voting as, I don't know, I think that the U.S. has gone through a lot of, like, cultural and economic change because mm-hmm. there's been, like, a push towards mechanization and jobs in, like, coal country and in traditional agriculture have been, you know, falling behind in favor of, like, jobs that require technical proficiency. And, you know, we've also gone through 8 years of, like, having a black president, and we've gone through, like, I think that in the U.S. at least there's been a surge in feminism. And I think there was a bit of a backlash to that much cultural change. And I think, I guess, the reason why Donald Trump managed to, like, inspire such a, like, you know, a supportive base is because people were looking for a champion, I guess, to, because, like, with the phrase "Make America Great Again," it's not really, I don't know, it's hearkening back to a better time that I don't really know ever existed. But it's for people that were maybe better off, you know, before we went through
better
such
off
culture.
In what way?
I'm not even sure economically. I guess, like, at least socially, they believe that, like, they could. I don't
know. I just want to have an understanding for what you're saying.
People who I think weren't do, like who are.
So
like,
see, when he says "Make America Great Again," to me, it says let's go back to earlier times. Earlier times when people were hung, earlier times where people of color were even under more oppression. I mean, what was better earlier than now? I mean, that's what it says to me, and that's why I'm not going now. Now, what could be better? Let me get with Quinn, and then I'll come to you.
Okay. Yeah, well, I just wanted to talk about the idea of voting for party because I think this election was really weird on that subject because mm-hmm. Trump was kind of his own person the entire time. He was never really he's not really a Republican. He follows some Republican ideas, but that's it. And then Hillary was one of the more conservative Democrats.
Right. Exactly.
Especially on defense and things like that. So I think that a lot of people voted only on party loyalty mm-hmm. and tried to kind of ignore the issues. And I think that the people who didn't ignore the issues voted for the other party. And so I think that it was really party loyalties that kind of decided the election.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Backtracking a little bit more sure. to, like, what was America. I don't know. My dad's family is from an agricultural industrial town, like processing of food products in Iowa. And my family and my dad's friends and all their families have worked in the factories for generations. You know, I mean, I was talking to my dad about my great-grandmother who worked in a meat processing plant for, like, 70 years from, like, the time when she got married to the time when she, like, when she had to retire. And, you know, my dad talks about it's always very different for me when I'm up there than it is when I'm down here because, like, it's very possible in other places to have like a solid middle class that we don't have in Tallahassee. I mean, my family is middle class, but we're definitely a rarity. Most people are like upper middle or lower middle. And in Iowa, there's like, go Iowa, but there is like this feeling of hopelessness because I know that my uncle probably assumed that he would get those kinds of jobs or have those kinds of opportunities, but he was born a few generations later, and by that time, it was expected that you did well in school, that you maybe looked at going to college or at least a community college. And those mechanization jobs that used to be good wages and enough wages to raise a family are no longer those kinds of jobs, and they're becoming service jobs, which are not enough to raise a family on. Mm-hmm. And I think that I don't know. When I hear the phrase "Make America Great Again," that's what I think of a lot of the time.
Okay.
Because I mean, I definitely agree that, you know, make America great again for who? But okay. I don't know. I think that it's true that Hillary really ignored a lot of the issues of people like who would be in my family, and you know, like my great grandmother, she was like 95. My uncle like rolled her out of the nursing home to go vote for Obama I mean, she was a Democrat forever, but she wouldn't have approved of like social programs. She wouldn't. I mean, she used the N-word frequently. It's a very different divide, and I think that Trump really appealed to a lot of people that felt that economics were more important than social movements for them. So I don't know. I have a lot of sympathy with them, and I think it's important to remember that it's not great for everyone.
Oh, yeah, I agree with all of what Ollie said, and I also think that, I try to be a policy buff. I think that policy matters, like, much more than slogans. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to understand the undercurrents that, you know, allowed Trump to become president in the first place. But I don't know. I guess what with the phrase like "Make America Great Again," a policy that ties to that is like through his like executive action repeal of the Clean Power Plan, he's trying to speak to those people who feel displaced by mechanization and is trying to, you know, revitalize the coal industry. But I agree with Ollie. I understand, you know, that upheaval must be hard to deal with, but it's. I feel like there's kind of, you know, an inevitable progression where, like, you have to move with technology and move with the times. And,
mm-hmm.
like, we should obviously try to ease the burden of people that are going, you know, who are losing their jobs to machines. But, like, one of the strongest aspects of the Clean Power Plan is that it didn't seek to, like, just eliminate, you know, jobs from the energy sector in the name of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. It sought to, like, you know, reallocate funds that would be going to coal plants and try to reinvest them in renewable energy and, you know, like solar and wind farms. And I think that, I mean, again, like if you're a coal miner, and that's a hard transition to make, but I think the government's job should be to help move those people.
Exactly.
Like, I don't want to make it seem like they're living in the past, like they're Neanderthals, but I mean, you need, if the United States wants to keep up with the international community, then
you gotta be realistic.
Yeah.
And that's not what's happening. I mean, when you say that kind of, that's not realism. We're not gonna go, even with Trump in the president, we're not going back to that. Comment.
What I wanted to say is that though, you know, technology's moving ahead, there is definitely academic inflation. So all of these people who once had these jobs they could get out of high school mm-hmm. and start working on this solid job and they could raise a family on this amount, now people who can't afford going to college basically have to work two or three jobs to actually support their family. And so though the times are moving on and technology is getting better, not everybody can afford going to college. Not everybody can afford being an engineer.
And not everybody is college material.
Exactly.
Either. And that doesn't mean you can't be successful. But everybody doesn't need to go to college.
Yeah.
I don't mean to cut you off. But I do think that there's...
No, go right ahead.
I just do think that there's this myth that, like our high school system has become so like college focused that it's really hard for anyone to get good information about like vocational education. But anyway,
I think that's a very valid point. Okay, hope the right people are listening. Quinn,
I agree with that. I don't see an alternative. I don't see how we can go backwards with academic inflation because it's just kind of what happens as mechanization increases. But what I wanted to say was, on the topic of what Make America Great Again meant, to me, I always looked at it and I always kind of remembered back to pre-World War II maybe, like when we were isolationist and we didn't want to involve ourselves in any kind of in any country business. We wanted to be ourselves. We wanted to work only inside of our country and we wanted to move our country forward without worrying about helping other countries move forward.
Okay.
What I think about when I hear Make America Great Again, and I know this is off policy, but what
it's fine.
It's that the time before 9/11. It felt, you know, the world in America, it felt safer. And after 9/11 happened, it seems like that's what everybody's focused on. Everybody's focused on all these problems in the Middle East. And even though it doesn't affect a lot of people here, it's always like in the back of your mind that something can come in and stir up your life. And I think the conservative resurgence that came in with the Trump presidency, that it has something to do with it. Okay.
I mean, I personally don't remember a time before 9/11. Going to the airport's always been hard for me. But I guess I agree with Liana, and I think that the phrase or the sentiment of "Make America Great Again" has been like felt in a lot of different nations, especially within Europe, because I think there's a growing fear of. I think the globalistic world is, like, generally pretty scary because there's so many things that are going on and so many crises that are currently, you know, like, evolving. Mm-hmm. So that, and I think when you're faced with, like, you know, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, you know, the problem, like, I don't know, the challenge of defeating ISIS in the Middle East and terrorism in general, there's a tendency to retreat from that and to focus on your own issues because you feel as if the world is so dangerous that you should, you know, create a bubble and protect yourself from it and focus on those that are your own. And I think that's an impulse we have to reject, but it's understandable.
Okay. All right. Quinn, I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts, and when we get come back, I will start with you. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a break, but we will return momentarily. What's the 411? The 411 comes to you from Quinn Huckabee. All right. And I'm going to go to you, Quinn, and then you can tell us where you sit on all of this or what you wanted to say.
Well, in thinking about Make America Great Again, I was also thinking about how halfway through his campaign to run for president, Trump added Make America Safe Again when he got the question about how to deal with, you know, riots in cities. And I think that that kind of harkens back to a time when there weren't, you know, like there wasn't racial unrest. There weren't people trying to make changes happen in cities. There wasn't a disassociation between government and people. There weren't a lot of protests happening. And that there was a time period like that. I think, you know, the Reagan years were kind of like that. And he's always kind of tried to compare himself to Ronald Reagan, it seems like, and try to, you know, better himself from Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I feel like the protests are a good thing because that people are showing what they actually feel. Yeah. They're showing what they want. They're demanding rights that they deserve for a long time. And I understand that's what, you know, Quinn probably meant, but that just because when Trump is promising Make America Safe Again, I laugh at that because there's only a certain degree of safety that you can get to without stepping on any more toes. If Trump wants to make America safe again, maybe he can amend the Second Amendment. Maybe he can, you know, indeed, cut back on gun violence because that's been a really big issue.
No, you make it safe by having concealed carry weapons. Don't you know that? I mean, I'm being facetious, okay? Yeah. I mean, but that seems to be the trend. I mean, if you're sitting back and you're looking, well, that's what's happening. I mean, they're getting ready to pass it in Ohio. Go on.
Just to clarify, that is what I meant. I meant that. I was trying to say that I think he wanted. There are a lot of people that didn't like just change, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, sometimes it's okay to not change for a certain period of time, but you can't always not change or you'll never improve.
Right.
And so I think that there were a lot of people who were like their daily lives were being disturbed, and Trump felt like he could tap in on that. And so He said, let's go back to a time where your daily lives weren't being disturbed, where you could just kind of move forward and go to your job normally and things like that.
Okay, yes.
I think all of the undercurrents that we're identifying and all of the troubles that, you know, middle America and like the fears that they were holding about like the fact that their lives are being displaced, I think those are definitely valid. I don't know if choosing Donald Trump as your champion is still a valid choice because, I mean, I guess he was certainly the best option available. He was the only one that was, you know, I guess he...
He was the best option available?
I think there's a certain level of pretension that I think is, like, pretty consistent within most mainstream politicians because to say that, to be audacious enough to say, you know, I think that I'm the best person to run this entire nation, you have to have, like, you know, a certain ego. And,
Well, you'd have to have a certain ego, no matter who you are or your party affiliation, to be president.
Yeah.
That's just the reality. Again.
So, I mean, I certainly think that Donald Trump has an ego, but I think he was speaking at least... I mean, honestly, I think that to a certain extent, his lack of policy knowledge served him very well, because he's certainly an easier politician to understand than most. I think that, personally, I think I understand the proposed, like, Paul Ryan's proposed replacement to the Affordable Care Act to, like, a certain extent, but parts of it I find pretty cryptic, and I think that's partially because it was being developed, like, you know, in the last few hours before when they were trying to get a vote passed.
What I don't understand is they've had 7 years... 8 years to work on this? I mean, from the moment it started, they were opposing it, and now they have control in both houses. I mean, why didn't it pass? Okay, let me go around the table.
Well, it didn't pass because it wasn't a good plan. If it was a good plan, moderate Republicans would have went with it. But moderate Republicans, that we have senators, you know, that are good enough to say, no, this is not better than Obamacare, that we're going to vote against this. And, it, you know, as Hannah just said, it was simply just, you know, a quick draft. It wasn't like a final draft that you wanted to see. And I like how quickly Trump went to go with his decision. Like, he said, okay, we tried it, we're moving on, but I want to kind of go down on Congress again. Yeah, they had 7 years to write this. Why did they just start now? Like, if they were against it for all these years, why didn't they make something better?
Right.
I don't know. I can just kind of see Donald Trump throwing out the 7 years of work and, like, redoing it completely.
I don't think he had anything to do with it.
I can see him doing it. And so I just think that, I don't know, there was a portion of the Republican Party, I think they were called the Freedom Caucus, that they brought sense to the Republican side, and I was glad to see that because they realized that the premiums would not be lowered. Like, it wouldn't. The improvements that the Republicans wanted to make wouldn't be made by the plan. Like, the whole point of the plan was to lower premiums and to make it, you know,
accessible to more folks.
Right.
More on the plan.
And to, you know, do that all with privatized healthcare. And so the plan wasn't even going to answer the central part of the Republican platform on healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It was a bad moment for the Republican Party.
Did you?
I agree with Quinn and Uliana. Also, shout out to my man Bernie Sanders for proposing a single payer system. He's crazy. It's never gonna pass, but I really love Bernie Sanders, so I hope that he's doing well.
I think they're following, like, you know, the end of the Bush presidency and, like, the ascendancy of, you know, Obama and Democrats for, like, the short period of time where they maintained, you know, a majority in the House and the Senate. The Republicans have basically been a party that stood for little and opposed everything in their path, starting from, like, the roots of the Tea Party movement. And then, you know, I think, honestly, I don't think the Tea Party ever really died. I think that they were reborn in, like, a slightly less crazy form as the Freedom Caucus, because they've never, I mean, I think the Republican Party has never really coalesced, and they've never really, like, for the past 8 years, they've never really had to get behind a specific, like, policy, and they've never had to all agree, because they could simply, like, go home to their constituents and demonize, you know, Democratic rule. So I think they really, I don't know, they don't know how to make a deal. They assumed that they would be getting a president that would be able to make a deal. That's what he marketed himself as, and that's not occurring. So I think that's why it failed. But I also think
too
of
bad, like, we're not on television, so people can see the expressions.
When I think of the actions that Donald Trump is, like, taking, sometimes I think he's thinking, like, you know, if he was in my position, what would Emperor Palpatine do? I think the Freedom Caucus is, like, their main problem with the proposed replacement was the essential health benefits that it guaranteed. And I guess I understand, like, you know, like, having trouble with the minutiae of it, but that's the primary health care part of the Affordable Care Act. And I feel like opposing, like, health care generally is a pretty bad idea. So I think
health care is not a right. It's a privilege.
I think that's one thing that I think Obama really tried to drive home was that it was a right, and he didn't. Mm-hmm. I actually do think that the Affordable Care Act will endure longer than I thought it would. When during the candidacy, during Trump's campaigning, I thought it'd be gone on day one, as he said it would be. But I think I think he's finally realizing that it's pretty hard to get people to coalesce on such fundamental issues. So I think it might endure longer.
Well, let's move on to some other, because we only have a few of minutes to talk about other things. What about the Russian connection to the Trump administration? What do you think of that?
Well, I think I'd like to start on this because I am Russian. I support Putin all the way, and I'd like to explain why, because a lot of the American public doesn't understand. Mm-hmm. So after the Soviet Union fell apart, they had really bad times in Russia and in Ukraine, and all of the countries that fell from the Soviet Union, everybody was stealing from, you know, what previously was the Soviet Union, the government property. They were taking the country apart. They were selling it to Europe. They were selling it. There was a lot of just gang violence. There's a lot of gang activity. And so until, like, the 2000s, things didn't really stable out. My parents lived in that time. They had to go to college in that time. A lot of people were starving in that time. It was really bad. And a lot of people don't understand that. Mm-hmm. And so when Putin came into power, he helped a lot of people. And that's why so many people are behind him. A lot of people in America see him, you know, as a dictator or somebody who cuts corners to get what he wants. But if you go to, like, an average small Russian town, you can ask the individual what Putin did. And economically, he really helped the country, though I don't believe that he tampered with the votes in the election.
The actual votes.
Solely because I don't think he cares that much about it. He did. After a lot of consideration on this topic, I think that he did hack into the DNC, but I don't think he did anything, like, to it. Like, he just looked at their information. And that's me being naive. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that Trump is trying to solve this conflict with Russia, because we don't need any more violence in the world, more than there is. And I feel like Hillary was very, you know, very aggressive towards that point.
Okay, we'll go around the table. I see you all have your comments that you want to make.
I do. I agree. The Russian-American relationship needs to heal. It's time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a long time since the end of the Cold War. But I do also think that the Russian-American relationship, like, specifically between Trump and Putin, is a lot more Trump than Putin. I think Trump, for whatever his reasons are, we may never know. I think that he kind of wants to model himself after Putin, almost, in some ways. And one really disturbing thing that he said one time, he was getting interviewed about his relationship with Putin, and the interviewer was talking about something that Russia had allegedly done, and Trump said, "Oh, that's nothing. Have you seen some of the things our country has done?" And, you know, I don't think that it's that you should say something like that if you're the president of the United States. I don't think you should say something about your own country if you cared enough to run for it and try to lead it. And you're not going to try to improve anything. I don't think you should say something like that.
Okay. Well, I disagree with Quinn, but that's okay. I'm not going to talk about that. I want to talk a little about Trump's administration and the fact that all of the people that he chose in his cabinet are, like, somehow tied to Russia. And I don't know. I'm a fan of peace. I like peace. If you're going to pursue peace, you probably shouldn't fire your entire State Department. That might be a good idea. I don't know. But also, it's, like, it's so frustrating because if you want to pursue peace, you should, you know, use your Secretary of State, who was someone who has very strong ties to, like, strong connections to Russia, but not ties in the sense of, like, bad or illegal or immoral. But instead of, like, having people in your cabinet get weird information that may or may not be legal from Russia and have ties that are kind of morally dubious, I don't think that's a good idea. I think that if we're going to pursue peace, we should do it together, unilaterally, and in public so that people can be informed about what's going on, not behind closed doors. I think that is ridiculously shady, and I think that people should absolutely be suspicious about that. Furthermore, I also, like I said, I'm a fan of peace, but I think that Trump is not going to bring peace. I think that his opinion of Putin is based on an idea that Trump has, that he can conquer anything, that or that he portrays that he can conquer anybody, any friendship. And I don't think that Putin is that way. I don't think, like Uliana said, he's someone with a lot of popular support. If Trump thinks that Putin can be, you know, swayed so easily, I think he's going to be sorely disappointed. Just because I think that it's built on false hopes. And I think that, in that sense, I think that Hillary would have been better for Putin just because she's realistic about the relationship and the history between the United States and Russia. And to just pretend that it didn't happen would be wrong.
Yes, ma'am.
I certainly understand, you know, if, like, why Russian nationals would be so, like, in favor of Vladimir Putin. Because I think he has been very good for his people. And during his, 10 years as premier of Russia, the GDP of Russia grew considerably, and so did their international standing. Yes. And I also think he's just, like, an insanely interesting guy. Because he's been, since 2013, Forbes has listed him as the most powerful person in the world, which is just, you know, a cool title. It's what I'm aspiring to be. But it's, yeah, I think the amount of ties to the Russian government within the Trump administration is, like, fairly alarming. And there's nothing wrong with, of course, just talking with Russia, but the fact that Def Sessions omitted information about talking to Russian officials under oath is fairly alarming. And I think,
and then his son, Trump's son, son-in-law, recently, they brought up that he had meetings with
I think Rance Priebus also has ties, and Paul Manafort.
Paul Manafort's the one that Manafort scares me.
Yeah, right. And he's out now, but
But
it's just, I think that As the president of the United States, you have to advocate for your people. And I think that's something that Vladimir Putin is very good at. And I think that that's something that Donald Trump needs to learn to do. Because while he may want to be friends with Vladimir Putin, he should care about his friendship with his constituents more. And he should advocate, when given the opportunity to, refute Vladimir Putin and to, you know, promote the interests of the United States, he constantly defends Putin. And I don't understand his impulse to do that, and I don't understand why he isn't more dedicated to promoting the well-being of the American people.
Yes.
I'm going to
go. Very quickly.
Oh, what I wanted to say, just this last point, a lot of people, you know, in the past trashed on Russia all the time and were bringing up all the bad things that, you know, Russia did. So I'm not, you know, I agree that Trump should support his country, but also you know, what's wrong with trying to fix the relationship between Russia and the United States?
And we'll end on that note. To my listening audience, thanks for the privilege of your ear and time. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.